All right, so the Fabulous 50s. Here's what we accomplished yesterday. So a general overview of the 50s as we head into that decade, that moment in history, as we emerge from World War II. And I know that World War II ends in 1945, and, well, the decade of the 50s is, you know, 5 years later, but still, we consider that last, that emergence from World War II into the 1950s, or into the time right after that, as the 1950s. And so we talked a little bit about Truman and his presidency, and then Eisenhower. Eisenhower is the president to be associated with the 50s. Two-term president elected in 52. So that means he's president for 7 of the 10 years of the 1950s. So that's a fair association, recognizing that Truman bridges that gap from World War II, end of World War II, to the Eisenhower 50s. And then, after spending some time with Truman and Eisenhower, spent some time with the American Dream of the 1950s and some certain characteristics of the 1950s and events of the 1950s that support those characteristics of the 1950s. And that, so we went through all kinds of, well, what I think is cool stuff, and ended up at page 9, which is where I'll start off today. So, middle-class America, we associate with the Fabulous 50s. Consumerism was a major characteristic, identifying trait of the 1950s. Consumerism was big in the 1920s and in the 1950s. In case you haven't figured it out yet, one of the favorite comparisons in history is 1920s and 1950s. I think you have done some work with that already, but don't be surprised, some of you, if there is that comparison in some fashion on the national exam. So for consumerism, that's material comfort, social status, achievement and success, progress, are all blended into that. So let me do something with you that I did yesterday. This is important to understanding the 1950s. So my analogy is a airport walkway. You've all been on those. And so that's the 1950s mentality. Conformity, ease, we're all on the same team, don't rock the boat. So imagine stepping on that walkway, and there you go. It's a nice, easy journey from there to there. You and the people in front of you, the people in back of you, you're all on the same runway, and it's pretty narrow, right? And you're all headed in the same direction at a nice pace. Be happy with that. Be happy with that. Now, if you look off to the side, one direction or the other, and you see something going on that you don't like, just realize where you're at. You're on the walkway, and life is good for you. So don't rock the boat. See something over here you don't like? That's not... Just let it somehow take care of itself. And guess what? If you just wait for 5 seconds, that's going to be past you, right? So keep that in mind with the 1950s. That was the mentality, the American mentality of the 1950s. Conformity, don't rock the boat, everything's pretty good here in America. So back to the lecture guide, page 9. I didn't have time to go through this at lunch like I usually do. I got interrupted, and so usually I've got a few things highlighted. So that means I might move a little bit slower here today in that regard. Some of these things I get such a kick out of. Third item down, kitchen appliances, push button ease. That was one of the cool things. Every generation, I think, has its cool things. We got to a point, and this is old news for you, but we got to a point where remote was a cool thing. You know, remotes didn't exist forever, so at some point, hey, remote, you can sit in your chair 10 feet away from the TV, and guess what? You can change channels, you can turn it off and on just with this remote. And then what? Ceiling fans are remote, and now cars, open, you know, turn on the heater in the car, remote, anything you want to do, remote. So that was kind of the flavor of the day for a while, and now it's been around for so long, it's just kind of old news. It's like, I mean, if somebody says, isn't this cool? Look, I, remote. You're kind of looking at them like, okay, what's so cool about that? Yeah. And well, so back to the push button thing. So for a while, push button meant cool. If you could control something with push button, that just meant it was cool. You could be just as easy to turn a dial, to click a dial, to, you know, 1, 2, or 3, but no, got to have 3 push buttons, you know, 1, 2, or 3, something like that. Think about your cars. And when you drive your cars, most of you now have a automatic transmission, so you just put it in drive. Well, I remember my debate partner in high school had a car that had push-button transmission. So you didn't shift it, you just, whatever, you know, it had like 6 buttons on the dashboard and, you know, in front of you someplace, and you just push for park, push for drive, push for reverse, you know, something like that. I mean, just because it was cool. So anyway, so push button was the flavor of the day in terms of electronic gadgetry for a while, instead of turning that knob. Planned obsolescence. That's a term you've been introduced to before, and let's see, when did I do that? 1920s. So planned obsolescence didn't originate in the 50s, but it reflects again a comparison to the 1920s. So you know what that is, right? It's the products will need replacement by design. And if not the whole product, then, you know, a part of the product might need to be replaced by design. We don't dare put all of our ingenuity into this product because we'll drive ourselves out of business. Because we have the ingenuity, the knowledge to make a product a lot better than what we're really doing. But if we do that, then nobody's going to buy our product for 10 years. So we're going to drive ourselves out of business. All right. And we just live with that. That exists today. And that's just, I don't know if it's one of the ugly realities of life, but it is a reality of life. And so, yeah. Okay. Let's see. What else do I want to highlight here? Oh, guess what happens in the 1950s, you people? You people become the new target group for the business world, for profits. Think of advertisements that you see on TV now, magazines. And, I mean, try this sometime. I mean, this would be cumbersome. I mean, I don't know if who'd really want to do it, but for 24 hours, every advertisement you see on TV, I keep looking over there for TV because, you know, I used to have a TV there for years and years and years, and then they finally took them out. And so, you know, old habits die hard, right? So that's why every time I say TV, I always go like that, because I did it for so many years. Okay, anyway, look at the, you know, record those advertisements. I don't mean record. I mean, you know, keep a record of those advertisements. And I'll bet an overwhelming majority of advertisements target you. Or, you know, maybe into the 20s, you know, but the younger generation. All right, that's because, and please don't, please know that I don't mean this, you know, as a negative or in any way personal, but you're looking for your place in life, right? And you're a little bit more easily influenced. I mean, the older you get, the more comfortable you are, and if I got to drive a truck that's got rust on it, I can live with that. But 30 years ago, no rust on my truck. I don't want any. I'm going out and buying a new truck. You know, so the younger you are, I think, the more susceptible you are to product advertising, you know, and all the imagery that is created out there. All right. Franchising became popular, such as the greatest franchise in the world, right? McDonald's. Family life. So here is, and it's on your study guide, but here is a brick that an egg pusher painted just 4 or 5 years ago, in 18, as a matter of fact, about the 1950s. I spent a lot of time on that yesterday in lecture, and it's just perfect life. Everything about that is perfect. But then, of course, it's gilded, right? Because that's what you see on the surface. Oh, everything is. Yeah, it's perfect. I mean, family life and just everything is perfect, but it's gilded because, you know, it's not like that, really. But that was the image of the 1950s. Don't rock the boats. Enormous emphasis on family life, which, unfortunately, ladies, strengthened the gender expectations in society, right? It puts you, ladies, back in the role of wife and mother. And I mean, when you look at that painting, that brick, which is the same as the picture there, here, and I said this yesterday. I'm still going to say it again because I get kind of a kick out of this. So you got the whole family deciding to watch TV. Okay, all right. I mean, I'm sure that's happened at your place once or 1,000 times over the last 15 years. So we're going to have sort of a family night, movie, whatever. Yeah, okay. And I'm sure that when you decided to do that, your moms all said, oh, wait a minute. Can you give me half an hour so I can get a dress on and heels and put some, you know, makeup and do my hair and jewelry so that I can enjoy sitting around, you know, relaxing and watching this movie? And Dad said, oh, well, glad I still got my tie on from work. I mean, I know that when I sit around with the Tubbs family, watches movies or something like that, you know, 8 o'clock at night, I've always got a shirt and tie on when I do that, you know. So, of course not. But that was sort of the perfect image that's created there in the 1950s. Let's see. At the same time, by 1960, look at the fourth star from the bottom. A third of married women were employed outside the home. It's kind of a paradox. So there's that opportunity, mostly in service capacity. So, you know, there's services. You can provide services or you can provide goods. So for women, it's service. So like a hair stylist, waitressing, clerking at a store, you know, those are all services. So that's how most women were employed in the 1950s, which is still even though there's employment outside the home, it's still a little gender targeted, right?
Okay.
Community organizations like PTA and Little League, Boy, Girl Scouts. Can you see? Like I said, family life, social stability, lawnmowers, all that stuff, the goods for around the house. I just mentioned that, didn't I? I didn't do that on purpose. Lawnmowers, barbecue equipment, lawn decorations become increasingly popular. There used to be a point, I know that now you're in the generation, we've been here for a while, where, you know, a lot of homes have decks. All right. Well, when I grew up, very few homes had decks. A lot of homes had patios, which is kind of a cement slab that is it's ground level. And it might have a covering, but a lot of times not. But it was a patio where you'd have lawn furniture and a barbecue thing, a grill. But that was about it. And then at some point, you know, it's decking and then with the roofs and so forth and so on. So we've made that transition. Church attendance soared. Let's see. Parallel to the 1920s, where there was a growth of religious fundamentalism. I mean, Christian fundamentalism. And then that name right there, Evangelist Billy Graham, he passed away just a few years ago. But for most of my lifetime, he had TV specials. He was one of those, what do they call them? TV
personalities?
TV ministers, evangelists. But he was totally reputable. I mean, some, right? It's been kind of a sketchy situation for some. He was totally reputable, and he had huge, immense respect from widespread America, even if you weren't Protestant. All right, page 10, suburbanization means, well, safety, because you're away, you're removed from the inner city crime. External conformity. Geez, conformity. I mean, look at the photograph there on the right. Holy cow. I mean, conformity. Every one of those houses, they're cookie cutter houses. And that's the way it was when I grew up. That you still find those places where you drive down the street, all these new houses. And if you take a moment to really notice, it's like, wait a minute here. That's pretty much the same design. Or except, you know, maybe a mirror image. So you got the door on the left, and then the fireplace on the right. Well, and then the next one, well, the door on the right, the fireplace on the left, you know. Or maybe just one little thing about it that makes this house different than the next house. Some little cosmetic thing, you know. Instead of three windows, instead of the window being divided into thirds, it's divided into halves. You know, something like that. Or maybe two different designs. And so you have to go two or three houses before you see a repeat again. But, I mean, talk about conformity. So, and that brought about a couple bad things. I mean, well, conformity is not really a good thing anyway, right? But when taken to an extreme, then that could mean racism and group superiority. So we'll move to the suburbs, but hey, look, the reason we're moving to the suburbs is because we want to keep it white here. That's why we're moving. Not such a good thing, right? So, neighborhoods populated by people of similar background. And then look at the ad there on the left. So there's your houses. So for $11.6, apparently, you could pick one of those four house designs. And so that neighborhood off to the right would have all of those houses would be one of those four designs. and then maybe mirror images. So that would leave six big design. How's that for math? 4 times 2 is 6. Okay, 4 times 2 is 8. So maybe 8 different houses. So you wouldn't have to go, you know, pretty soon after you look around, it's like, wait a minute, this place is a lot more similar than it is different. And here's something that I thought was kind of interesting. Streets were curved. You know that we do that in neighborhoods. That's a tactic to slow traffic. But also to create the illusion of space. I never thought about that before. But when you have a neighborhood that would have, you know, let's say straight streets, then as opposed to one that just curve them a little bit, you create the illusion of a little more space than when they're straight. Yeah, never thought about that before. And then along with that, playgrounds, shopping malls, and so forth. Levitt towns were characteristic of that in the 1950s. So William Levitt became the Henry Ford of the housing industry. Remember Ford? We have credited Henry Ford with perfecting the assembly line. Not inventing the assembly line, but perfecting it, making it more efficient. So, and what was that statistic that we found in Garrity that construction of a Model T was, 20 different steps or 18 different steps, something like that. All right. So then 27 separate tasks in building a house. And then keep reading. Look at that. Less than 20 minutes to assemble a house. Because they're just segmented. And that doesn't include the plumbing, installing, you know, plumbing and electricity, or even the foundation, the cement foundation. But, you know, just the house itself, the wooden structure itself. Wow. Precise conformity. One tree every 28 feet. And I think today of associations, some of you live in associations, or you have rules and regulations about what you can do and can't do. One of the big things is the color of a house. If you live in an association, you got to keep the colors of the house sort of earthy, right? Can't do, purple or orange, you know, for example. Well, I think, look at this. One tree every 28 feet. Wow. No fences. Can only do laundry on the weekend. I mean, wow. Wow. Okay. Page 11. So, leisure time. More leisure time to get out and, well, just enjoy life. Oh, when's the last time we mentioned that? Oh, I know. The 1920s. Labor-saving devices. So that's a selling point. Why you want this in your house, this in your house, this in your house, because it cuts down on time you're going to be doing work. That's why you want a dryer. I know this will just blow you away. I grew up, my house that I told you about on Janet Street. We lived very comfortably. Guess what my mom never had, and every other house in like America had one, and that was a clothes dryer. Never had one. So she had the washer downstairs in the basement, but no dryer. Just didn't want to spend, $200 for a dryer. That's wasted money. Don't need a dryer. I can just hang the clothes up, you know. But then I brought this up because, so the dryer, you need a dryer, a clothes dryer, because it saves on work time. So if you do that, then you can get out and enjoy life a little bit, which, yeah, is absolutely true. All right. I told you about the, when we were back doing the houses, I told you about the decks. Guess what else houses didn't have when I grew up? They did not have, as a sort of a given,
Imagine this. Houses didn't have garages. That was not a given. Nowadays, if you're looking at a new house, there's been a new house. We're going to go look at a new house. And imagine just driving up, looking at that house, and it's like, wait a minute. Something's not right. Wait a minute. There's no garage here. There's a driveway. There's no garage. It's just a house. I mean, you and your parents, you'd go nuts. It's like, who wants to buy this, you know? Well, that's, so times change. Okay, that's, good. But when I was in your shoes, a lot of houses had garages. A lot of them didn't. And then when they did have a garage, it was disconnected from the house. I mean, it could be right next door, like 5 feet, but you couldn't go from the garage into the, the back door, something like that. And then a lot of the garages were just single car garages. And then pretty soon we got double. And I just bet a lot of you live in houses that have garages that accommodate 3 vehicles. And I mean, it's just, it just keeps going and going and going. Okay. I thought that was kind of a neat thing. All right. And so back to page 11. So fishing and hunting, boating, leisure, but also family. Don't you think mostly of family when you read that stuff? The Sun Belt states made huge gains in population. People are moving to the Sun Belt states. Pro sports on television became popular. So I always think of my dad. I had a couple of my dad's stories yesterday, and I've got a couple more before the week is over, and here goes one of them. So I remember thinking of baseball now. So baseball, for those of you who aren't aware of this, starting about now, well, maybe a month ago, and through October, you can, on any night of the week, you can find a baseball game. And sometimes 3 or 4 of them, depending on, certain packages you might have for your various TV networks. Okay. Well, it used to be that there was a game of the week, and that was on Saturday afternoon. NBC, I remember it. A game of the week. And that was it. And you watched whatever came on. If it was the Twins and the Orioles, and you're not a fan of either, it's like, this is the one game I get to watch in a week. So, kind of take it or leave it. And I remember my dad, a huge baseball fan, and so he'd make a point of watching that as much as he could. He was a Dodgers fan. And then eventually it got to Monday night football, Monday night baseball, which was big, and then there was Thursday night. Okay, so just like everything else I've mentioned today, it just, increased and increased and increased. Okay, so my dad's favorite place to watch the baseball game, in front of the only TV we had, in his Lazy Boy. And one of his favorite things to do while he was watching was to have a beer, and he'd poise pour the beer into a glass. All right. So he's watching this, and this one particular game, and I lots of times would watch it there as well. So I remember this like it was yesterday. So he has this beer in his hand, and he hadn't drank much. So it's, pretty close to the top. And he's in that place right between sleeping and not. You know how you always kind of get there when you're taking a nap? For 1 minute, you're sleeping. The next minute, you're kind of awake, and until you finally nod off. Okay, so he's right in that area. And the camera on the baseball game was behind, one of the cameras was behind the batter. And this is a 1 in a billion thing, or 1 in a 110 billion thing. I mean, it just happened. One of these neat little moments in life. Foul ball. Off the bat, and it comes right at the lens. I mean, it must have hit the lens just perfectly, which, like I said, what's the odds of that? But anyway, so he has just opened his eyes a little bit, and he sees this baseball coming, and of course he jumps a mile in the air out of the, in the chair, and his beer went, splashed a foot in the air all over him, and I remember seeing that, and I thought that was kind of funny, and he did too. So anyway, that's one of my memories, which fit my dad just beautifully, because as I said, or I think I said, he was such a great guy. Okay. And then there's baseball cards there. Baseball card collecting became really cool. It's not cool anymore. Because at one point in time, there was one baseball card for a player. I mean, each year. I mean, there it was. It was there. But nowadays, if you're familiar at all with the baseball cards, basketball cards, football cards, there's all kinds of versions, and the blue version, the green version, the on and on and on and on, and it's just nuts. It's endless. But this is when it was cool. You would buy a pack of baseball cards for a dime, and there was a piece of bubble gum in there, and whatever, 10 or 15 cards, and you'd trade them with your friends, and yeah, okay. I was a pretty good card collector when I was younger, and I had them all neatly. Now, I've told you that I'm borderline, oh, wait a minute, I bet I have to go on. Yeah, time out.